This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. You've no doubt heard of the U.S. Supreme Court case Brown versus Board of Education. That was the landmark decision in 1954 that found state laws establishing separate public schools for black and white students unconstitutional. A story far less appreciated is the legal back and forth over school segregation that had been going on for many years before the Brown decision. The push and pull was happening in courtrooms across the country, including places like rural Texas. Rutgers University professor Rachel Devlin is an historian, and she was struck to discover that nearly all of the school desegregation lawsuits in those pre-Brown years were filed by women and girls. And by the way, guess who volunteered to test the Brown decision once it came down? A Girl Stands at the Door, the title of Rachel Devlin's new book. Professor Devlin, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Good to be here.
You found girls far outnumbered boys in their efforts to desegregate all-white schools. Why was this especially a cause embraced by girls?
You know, the important thing to know about the late 1940s is that black and white school children had never gone to school together. And most people did not believe that it was possible for the two races to get along within the context of an intimate space like the schools. So you had to have a lot of social optimism going into it. Mm-hmm. And girls disproportionately believed that the schools could be desegregated.
Was this the child's decision to be that, you know, that crusader, or whether it was somebody else saying, this is the right image, this is just the sort of image we need to have, is that image of a young girl standing at the door?
Yeah. No, you know, parents were not thinking about the optics. What they were thinking about was who can go into this school and survive it. Who will be able to speak with these white adults? Because all of the children who ended up desegregating the schools had to first pass a battery of tests based on their academic ability and their psychological fitness. But they also, most crucially, had to meet with the superintendent of schools, and who would ask them, why do you want to come to a white school? Hmm. And these girls and young women had to come up with a reason on the spot. And for Southerners, there was no good reason to bring the races together that would get by a white audience. Mm-hmm. And girls as young as six knew this. But what girls also knew was that the schools that they were attending were in a state of crisis. So Leona Tate, who desegregated McDonough 19 in New Orleans, she was attending school prior to that on double and triple shifts. They could only go for a few hours a day. There were double classes with 50 students in a class. Mm. The buildings were falling apart. So it was not hard for these girls to understand the moral importance of what they were doing and the political reasons for what they were doing.
Could you say a little bit more about the sort of resistance that these young people faced, these young girls and young women?
So for the plaintiffs in the 1940s who filed these cases, they faced stiff backlash, not only from the white community, and some put their lives on the line, but also from the black community itself. There was no consensus about school desegregation. It was a very radical act to walk up the steps of a white school and attempt to enroll. It was so radical that crowds would gather of black citizens would gather on one side of the street just to watch. And the white students would press up against the windows to see what was going on, too. It was just unimaginable to people that a black student would attempt to attend a historically white school. In East Texas, or in Hearn, which is halfway between Dallas and Houston, the KKK decided that they were going to kill C.G. Jennings, the father of the twin girls who tried to walk into the white junior high. After they filed their lawsuit in 1947, C.G. Jennings had to stay up nights with a shotgun. So it was very dangerous.
What was going on in Texas at this time? Texas has been characterized sometimes over the years as being somewhat, if only slightly, more progressive when it came to issues of segregation when compared to some of the other former states of the Confederacy. But what did you find as you looked into what was happening in Texas?
Yes, and that is true for after Texans viewed what happened in Little Rock and in New Orleans, decisions were made to forestall that kind of event. But in the 1940s, you know, the schools were as segregated as anywhere else in the Deep South. What happened in Texas was very important. C.G. Jennings, with his twin daughters, Doris Ray and Doris Faye Jennings sued the Hearn Independent School District. And the NAACP in the area and the citizens of Hearn were behind him because the high school was a former German prisoner of war camp. Blackshear High School, which was the black high school, had burned to the ground in 1946. So what the town did was take the German prison of war buildings, move them to the old site of the black high school, and prop up the building with old tires.
Wow.
It was uninhabitable. And all of the parents of children who were to attend that school were furious. And so C.G. Jennings was willing to take his daughters and try to enroll them in the white school. He knew they would be rejected. They immediately turned around, went to Waco, and filed a lawsuit. Now, the reason this lawsuit is so important is that the Texas NAACP, Lulu White, contacted Thurgood Marshall, and she said, "You better get down here and file this case." And at that time, Thurgood Marshall wasn't even taking grade school cases. He was working on graduate school cases, teacher integration, teacher salaries. Mm-hmm. But he came down and he argued the case. And this was in the spring of 1948. Wow. And it was the very first case that Thurgood Marshall argued that set the groundwork for Brown v. Board of Education.
There's been so much written about Brown decision per se and about what came before and after that I think it's surprising that no one has ever tried to explore this dimension before. What was it that turned you on to this and made you think this is something that needs to be told?
So yes, it has not been explored. And I discovered when I was going through Ebony magazine about 10 years ago, I was looking for images of African-American young women for a project I was working on at that time. And I noticed that all the school desegregation stories were about girls and young women. And I thought at the time, you know, wow, is this editorial bias or does this reflect a reality that I haven't read about anywhere? So I went to the Library of Congress and looked at the papers of the NAACP. And I found that, in fact, there was a dozen or so lawsuits filed in the late 1940s to desegregate the schools years before the NAACP itself began to fight for school desegregation in the courts, and that all these lawsuits were, in fact, filed on behalf of girls and young women. I think what happened is that historians looked at Brown v. Board of Education, and they thought about it from the perspective of Thurgood Marshall and the NAACP, and they were interested in the legal arguments that the NAACP was making inside the courtroom. But most historians don't think of young women as historical actors. So it took a historian who was willing to see young people as actors, specifically to see young women as actors. Historians don't typically think about women or children, so they were missed.
Rachel Devlin is a history professor at Rutgers University. She's the author of A Girl Stands at the Door, about how girls and women led the fight for interracial education and desegregation. Rachel, thanks again. It's nice to talk with you on the Texas Standard.
Great to be here. Thank you.